So there's very different symptoms in young onset dementia that families experience, and actually they need a huge amount of support to understand those symptoms. So as I mentioned apathy earlier, if you understand the symptom, you can then work towards supporting that person. It's not just about memory, it's about so much more than memory.
Welcome to the Dementia Research Project, where I, Matt DeRay, explore the history, innovation and champions in and around the world of dementia. Today's guest, Jules Knight, is an admiral nurse whose expertise is in helping families affected by young onset Alzheimer's.
Hey, thanks. Thanks again, Jules, for your time. Really excited about this conversation. For those in the audience who may not know, could you share a bit about yourself and what you do at Dementia UK?
Yeah, I mean, as you've just mentioned, I work for a charity in the UK called Dementia UK. And the charity itself, I think, was set up around 30 plus years ago now. And the whole ethos really has been supporting families who are affected by dementia. And I started off as an admiral nurse. I think it was actually this year, this September, it's 25 years since I started as an admiral nurse. So I feel like I'm a bit of an old timer now, really. But it's such a wonderful job. And as I've just mentioned, we support families that are affected by dementia. And the charity comes from a real family basis. So originally, a family set the charity up because they were struggling to find the support they need. So it comes from the heart of the family, if you like. And it's certainly something that we carry on in the charity. So yeah, it's really about supporting families. My particular role that I'm doing now, I've been in post as the consultant admiral nurse for young onset dementia for the past three years. Terrible remembering time frames, especially since COVID, but yeah, about the last 3 years. And it's really focusing on families who are living with dementia when the person with dementia develops symptoms under the age of 65, so young onset dementia.
From a definition point of view for the audience, is that how you would characterize young onset under the age of 65? Are there any other points of references?
So in terms of how we look at young onset dementia, and there are variable definitions, but we feel that young onset dementia is where the person has developed symptoms before the age of 65. So they might not actually get a diagnosis until they're after 65, for example. But actually, if the symptoms started before they were 65, we would consider that to be young onset dementia.
What would you reckon is the prevalence of this in the UK?
So in the UK, we have, from some recent research, actually about 70,800 people. It is an estimate at the moment.
Right.
We don't know the exact figures,
yeah.
But that's the estimate, which is about, I think it's 7.5% of the total number of people that have dementia or have been diagnosed with dementia in the UK.
Right. And I think that's similar with a similar study did globally, right? I think that figures maybe about 10% of all Alzheimer's cases or dementia cases is early onset. In terms of the young onset dementia, right? Could you speak to what you see in your day-to-day in terms of the impact to maybe first the patient? And please correct me if the terminology is not correct, right?
We usually call it the person with dementia rather than a patient.
Ah, sorry.
It's the person with dementia. And we usually refer to family members as family carers.
Okay.
So not always, because, you know, certainly when I work with some families, they will say, well, actually, I'm a wife, not a carer. So you kind of pick your terminology carefully and you adapt it to each family.
Right. And I think this is why conversations like this is so important, because I think things of like the language we use is important.
Hugely important. I mean, for me, if I'm called a patient, I feel like I'm in hospital. It feels very medical. But actually, I think it's about remembering the human side and really thinking in a very person-centered way when you're working with families.
Right. So could you speak to, in your day-to-day, the impact on persons with early onset, right? And
yeah,
their family, like what's that spectrum of experience look like?
I think I mean, first and foremost, I guess if we start at the beginning, perhaps, of a journey for a family who are living with young onset, often the most challenging time for that family can actually be getting a diagnosis. It's a very chaotic time. We know in the UK, for example, the research shows that families who are in this situation often wait twice as long to get a diagnosis. So instead of 2 years for an older adult, it's usually around four plus years to get a diagnosis. And I guess during that time for the family, it's very, as I say, it's very chaotic. They're noticing changes in their loved one. And often it's very hard to kind of pinpoint down what those changes are related to. It can be a struggle understanding them. Often people will go to their doctors because they know something's different. And it takes a while to kind of work out why those changes are happening. Certainly for the GP, the general practitioner, which would be the first port of call in the UK for any primary care health, any primary care healthcare problems, the GP would be thinking about usually things that are reversible. So sometimes they'll be looking at thyroid function, they'll be looking at vitamin deficiencies. They'll even talk to the person about whether they're feeling depressed, anxious, etc. And if any of those things are an issue, then they will look to treat them. And also, I think what's really important for women is actually the GP should also be looking at things like perimenopause and menopause and the impact that that can have on cognition and how you function. So initially, the GP will be looking at things to rule out the most obvious things. And I guess last on the list, and sometimes it's not even thought about, will be the possibility that someone might have dementia when they're under 65. And this is where sometimes families struggle to get onto a referral pathway to get a diagnosis. So in the UK, the GP would usually refer on to a local memory service, or they would refer on to regional neurology services. So it can be quite difficult because we've got no structured pathways in the UK. So each area has a different sort of set of services and a different referral pathway, and some are great and some referral pathways are quite broken. So once the person is seen and actually gets that referral, again, we've got waiting lists within the NHS in the UK. So again, the family will often be waiting to get an initial appointment. They'll then be waiting perhaps for further specialist tests, things like scans, perhaps specialist testing, cognitive testing, for example. So it's not a quick process to get a diagnosis. Sometimes families can wait anything from, you know, I'd say 3 months is very quick, but often it's over a year.
Wow. And
sometimes they're going back a year later to get more tests to confirm a diagnosis. So it can be a really challenging time for them. And I guess from a neurology perspective, it's about making sure the person gets the right diagnosis, that they've had all the right tests, the right support. You know, that's, I guess, the medical side of things, but the home side of things during that time, as I mentioned, it's very chaotic because family life is changing. The person with dementia, how they function is changing. And you'll often find if they are, for example, in a married couple, one half of the couple, if you like, has to step up and start moving from being a spouse into a caring role. So that obviously has an emotional impact attached to it. But also it's the other side of that as well. It's thinking about the financial impact it might have if the person with dementia loses their job, if they need to move house, if they've got existing, you know, debts, because, for example, they might have a mortgage, they might have a car that's, you know, they're paying off. So it can be a real challenge. And then I think about children in those situations as well. You mentioned that you're a young person who was living with a family member with dementia. It's a huge impact on a child to be in that situation. And often children in those situations really don't get the support that they need. And the focus tends to be on the person with dementia, the spouse, but actually we need to also focus on the whole family and make sure that the whole family is supported.
Yeah, just to zoom in on two things, right? Like first one around the diagnostics, you mentioned like the severe wait times with the NHS. What are there private solutions out there, like online cognition tests or online private providers which people refer to?
Yeah, I mean there are private services within the UK that certainly families can contact. And, you know, I have worked with families where they have gone through the system privately. But it is very, very expensive, particularly if you need some of the specialist scans or if you need lumbar punctures, for example, to confirm diagnosis. And I think the other thing, I guess, about private services is that, you know, they're fantastic and they will provide a diagnosis. Obviously, you need to do your research. You need to be very particular about what service you choose. But post-diagnostically, it doesn't always lead to support. So people will get a diagnosis, but they don't necessarily get follow-up support afterwards. I have to say, it doesn't always happen in the NHS, particularly if you're diagnosed in a neurology service, but you're more likely to be able to access local services more easily if you go through the NHS, because there's tends to be, well, as I mentioned earlier, sometimes the referral pathways are quite broken, but if they are there, you should get referred on to the right people for support.
Do you mind speaking to the post-diagnostics care of a person with dementia once they've found out they've got that diagnosis?
Again, in the UK, because the services vary from region to region, families tend to experience a huge variation in what's available. Some areas of the UK have got fantastic services to support families living with young onset dementia. But I would say, certainly for the most part, it feels like most areas don't have appropriate support for families who are living with young onset dementia. It, as I mentioned, you know, when you're looking at what impacts on a family, it's quite different when you're a younger family as opposed to an older family in many, many ways. And I would say for the most part, the services aren't really there in the UK to support families, not in the way that they should be. And that's certainly something, you know, within Dementia UK that we strongly advocate and campaign for. We really want to see a change in service provision. Where we do have services for families, it's really about the families accessing appropriate post-diagnostic support. So once you've had that diagnosis, which is life-changing for you and your family, it's really important that post-diagnostically and in a very person-centered way, you get the support you need to come to terms with your diagnosis because it is life-changing. And also, it's really important to then think about the future. So future planning for you and your family once you've had that diagnosis. And certainly keeping families informed in terms of understanding what's going on, I think, is hugely important. Recently, I worked with a family where the husband was really struggling because his wife, one of the symptoms that she was having was apathy. So she really struggled to engage in the daily life of the family. So she wasn't cooking, she wasn't cleaning. I mean, they shared the chores, I might add, but both of them were working still. But when she was home, she just wasn't able to kind of really engage with kind of family life and the chores that keep the family working. So we worked in helping the husband understand what apathy is, that it is actually a symptom of dementia. It's not someone being lazy. It's not somebody who is being difficult. And actually, the way that you work with a person is, rather than cooking dinner separately as they used to share out those kind of chores, it was about cooking dinner together. So when they worked together, it worked really well. And because the husband had a really good understanding of what apathy was, that it was a symptom, he kind of said, I feel kind of calmer about it now. I understand it. But, you know, he said, I hate to call my wife lazy, but it just felt like she was being lazy and awkward. But now I understand that if I support her and instigate some of the things that she used to do on her own and we work together, that works much better for us as a family. So it's finding ways to support the family.
Right. This is slightly bizarre for me to listen to, because from my lived experience, this was a huge gap. This external service support, as you were, right? And it almost was like dealt within the family, however we knew how to.
Yeah.
Which, for better or for worse, I think it's kind of synonymous with what's happening in, I guess you can say, developing markets, where there is this lack of health services and care support for folks with this disease. Switching gears slightly, in terms of how the healthcare system is geared in the UK, I suppose in general, it's largely centered around treatment and care, with very little focus around, I guess, for lack of a better word, prevention, right? Brain healthy habits. Is there anything you suggest to family members who maybe have that genetic risk, right? You can't run away from it. Brain healthy habits. What's the typical advice you give someone?
I guess initially, just to reassure people, it's quite rare to have a genetic dementia. And we do see genetic dementias more in younger families, I think. And I need to remember the statistics on this. I'm sure it's 7 to 12%. And there are some dementias that have a particular gene associated with them, but it is quite rare. There are other genes that we may or may not have in the population that, I guess, make your risk of developing dementia later in life higher, shall we say. But you could have the gene and not go on to get dementia, or you might not have any of the genes, but you could still go on to get dementia. There's so many factors that can influence the development of dementia, which is why we have so much research going on in the world. And I should also say there are about 200 or over 200 types of dementia. So, yeah. Everyone always looks astonished when I say that, but yeah, about 200 plus.
Do you mean, sorry to interrupt. So dementia, like 60 to 70% of dementia is Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. Are you saying these are subgroups of Alzheimer's disease or?
No. Alzheimer's is the most common type of dementia that we see. And then after that, we have vascular dementia, which is the second most common type. And then you've got a list running down. But there is about 200 plus types. Some of them are subtypes, but yeah, there's some very, very rare dementias out there. So it's obviously important that we focus on Alzheimer's and vascular dementia and the most common types. And they also affect younger people as well as older people. But it's important also to remember that we have 198 plus other types of dementia. So some of them are very rare. And in terms of, you know, looking at modifiable risk factors, a lot of the research is showing essentially that we need to look after ourselves as human beings. We need to take care of ourselves. So it's all the things that we see in the media for heart disease, for cancer, for dementia. It's about making sure that we eat a healthy diet. And there is some research around the Mediterranean diet being very healthy. It's about, if you do drink alcohol, it's about making sure that you do so within safe limits. In the UK, with the NHS, they have guidance on how many units of alcohol you should have per week. So, you know, I'd say to people, have a look on the NHS website. It's about making sure you keep your brain active, so that you challenge your brain, you learn new things, you socialize, you meet people. You know, loneliness is a big contributor. So making sure that you keep that brain active as well. People do Sudoku puzzles, don't they? And all kinds of things. That's really important, learning different languages. I'm not saying this is what you should do, but it's just things that people do to keep their brain active. And then making sure that you go and get your checks at your GP, again in the UK. I've just been for my annual checkup, and the GP weighs you. They do a blood test. So they look at things like your cholesterol, for example. they take your blood pressure. So they do all of those preventative checks. Mm-hmm. And if your cholesterol's high, they'll, you know, have a chat to you about what's your diet like, looking at ways that you can naturally reduce your cholesterol levels. You know, if your blood pressure's high again, they look at diet, they look at exercise. And I guess the other big one that I didn't mention is smoking. You know, I think certainly in the UK, I would say there's been strategies to reduce the number of people smoking in the UK. And ideally, all healthcare professionals would say, don't smoke, give up smoking if you can.
Right. I know UK is making huge strides in terms of diagnostics, blood-based biomarkers, right? So blood tests. Is the hope one day, like you mentioned, going when you do your annual checkups, right? When you give your blood, there'll be a dementia. The same way you check if your cholesterol is high, you'll be able to see your dementia risk. Is that where it's headed?
I don't know a huge amount about that, actually. But I mean, having read the small amount that I have read, I would say I think that's probably what they'd like to see. How far off that is, I don't know. That's not something I can comment on. But I mean, certainly if you're going to have a dementia test now, if you're an older person referred to a memory service, again, that diagnosis doesn't happen in one visit. It requires a cognitive screen, potentially a brain scan, a detailed assessment of your family history as well.
Right.
Sometimes collateral history from a family member so they can talk through what changes they've seen. And again, that diagnosis can take anything from 8 to 12 weeks at a minimum, okay, from experience. So that's kind of for an older person. And it does tend to be easier when you're diagnosing older people. For younger people, because they're more, I guess there's more prevalence of the rarer types of dementia in younger people, that's often why it takes so much longer to get that diagnosis and why you need the specialist testing, specialist scans, et cetera. So it's a lot more complex for younger people. So I guess in the future, we may see tests for the common dementias like Alzheimer's we've just spoken about. But we've also got to remember that there's the other dementias that are there as well.
You mentioned loneliness or keeping active social life as something everyone should do, right? The UK is also one of the leaders in social prescribing, right?
Yeah.
Do you mind speaking a bit about social prescribing and how it relates in dementia care, especially as a pre and post diagnostic intervention?
So certainly the experience that I've had with social prescribing is it doesn't always support the family. The reason being is the social prescribers themselves are fantastic, but often for younger families, the support that they need isn't there. So when you're looking at social prescribers, for example, working with older families, they may work with someone who's older and advise them on the services and support they have in their local community. And actually there may be, for example, a dementia cafe that's available for them to go to, and they can help with them getting involved with that dementia cafe. But actually that dementia cafe might be a dementia cafe for older people, for over 65. And you wouldn't necessarily see a dementia cafe that's specifically for younger people. So it's more challenging for social prescribing for younger families with dementia. And because their needs are so unique, they don't fit with other services either. So you might say, well, what about you? You know, they could maybe access mental health services for younger people, but actually that it's not appropriate for the need that they have. So it can sometimes be really difficult to support younger families with finding those social connections. And I guess it's difficult for families as well, because if the person with dementia is still working, often those social connections in relation to the dementia will often need to be in the evening as well. And because the rarity or relative rarity of young onset dementia, I certainly find that they're online support, which is, you know, that's fine, but it's really difficult for them to connect with other young onset families locally. That connection seems to be a real challenge, and that's something that the social prescribers wouldn't necessarily be able to help with.
Is that a gap or something that the Young Dementia Network is trying to address?
Yeah, I mean, that certainly the Young Dementia Network is it sits alongside Dementia UK, and it's certainly something that they advocate. They very much work with families and professionals across the UK in really championing the needs of families living with young onset. So it's about highlighting the support that family needs pre-diagnostically all the way through that journey. And, you know, it's something that they work hard to look, particularly, I guess, around the referral pathways that we were mentioning earlier, and looking at post-diagnostic pathways as well. And what we'd really like to see is there to be a gold standard referral pathway and post-diagnostic support, so that every family in the UK has a service local to them, and they have professionals that are local to them who have a really good understanding of young onset dementia.
Right. And I guess, how far away would you say the UK is from that gold standard you mentioned? Like, what are some of what's in its way right now from that gold standard? Is it a matter of time or policy or funding resources?
All of those things. Right. I think all of those things, Matthew. I think we're quite a long way from achieving a gold standard. With, you know, there's lots of work happening around looking at what that gold standard looks like. We have pockets of services in the UK that are doing fantastic work, which you would say is gold standard. And we work with families about them being able to express what they would like to see from a gold standard service. So there is a lot of work and research going on into that. It's also, I think it's across the board, really. It's recognising the numbers of people that we have with young onset dementia. As I mentioned earlier, the figure of 70,800, it's an estimate. We don't actually know the exact figures. So it's about working on the statistics. And when you know how many people you have in each area of the country, you can then look to provide adequate services. That's often an issue. But it's not necessarily about achieving that gold standard straight away. It's about working towards that gold standard and making small changes that work really well for that family. So yes, sometimes those changes can be made without financial implications to the NHS or, you know, our social services. So it's thinking about how we can change things, how we can use services that we have already, but to make them more aware of the needs of young onset so that they can provide service provision for them. So I guess it's, you know, we have grand plans of a gold standard, but we also are realistic in that we recognise sometimes it's about baby steps and really working to develop services for young onset over months and years. That would be our aim, really. And giving families a voice as well. The Young Dementia Network is about giving families affected by young onset dementia a voice. And that is also really, really important, and campaigning for these things as we move forward.
It 100% is really, really important, Jules, because, like, I think a lot of people think dementia is limited to a certain age group, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of folks with young onset dementia probably do they identify with that older? Is that another issue you see, like that issue of identity?
It's about you really do need to think about people's age. You know, a lot of people with dementia have spoken to me about services they've been offered. And, you know, a family that I've been working with, a person with dementia, was offered a day centre. And the person with dementia is in their 50s. And the people in the day centre, he said, no offence to my older friends, Jules, but I went to the day centre and everyone was in their 80s. And the music they were playing isn't music I'd listen to. And they were playing bingo. And He said, no offense to bingo, it has its place, but I don't play bingo. And, you know, I want to go out on long walks, and I, you know, I want, my hobby is fishing, and I need somebody to be with me. So it's about looking at how we can support people with dementia in a more bespoke way. And I think families often really face that as a challenge. If the person with dementia is not able to work anymore and they're at home, and they're at home 7 days a week, the family might be around at the weekends, but actually what's happening those 5 days a week when the family works Monday to Friday or the kids are at school? It's about thinking what support that person with dementia needs during those 5 days. And, you know, I'm not saying that they need to be doing something every day for 5 days, but it's thinking about having support, having a personal assistant who can take that person with dementia for a walk, to go fishing, and having those things to look forward to and planning in that social time so that the family can carry on working, but also the person with dementia is getting support. I've worked again with families where the person with dementia's parents have funded support for them. Well, they've moved in together. So the person with dementia, their spouse, their children, they've all moved in with grandparents, mum and dad,
so
across generations in the same household. You know, it has its pros and cons. Obviously, you know, the parents of the person with dementia are never expecting their child to move back home at that stage of life, but it can work. But there are families where, because of finances, the situation they're in, they don't meet the criteria for kind of any funding or any support. And then the person with dementia kind of falls through the gaps. There aren't services for them to connect to. So it can be a real challenge. It can be a real challenge.
Right.
And I think what we do is highlight these needs. And we certainly, for Dementia UK, if you look on our website, we share stories from families who really want to tell their story. And we certainly give, obviously, where appropriate, families the option to share their stories. But yeah, it's a real challenge. It's often heartbreaking to hear the struggles that families have gone through as well.
Are there any rays of light you see? Like, because even from my own personal experience, yes, it was tough, but there were actual moments of levity, of love, of bringing families together that probably may not be that close to begin with, but I'm sure you see a lot of these type of examples out there in your line of work as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Helping families come together, peer support is extremely important. So when I work with families, and I work with families across the UK, so I support families online like this or by telephone, so I'm often not in their local area. And one of the things I always speak to families about is making local connections. So it might be that you make connections with the local dementia services. There might be a dementia cafe, and it might not be perfect in that mostly it's older people there, but actually you may find by going to that cafe that you then find other young onset families. And you can start making those connections. And one of the other things I've said to families, if you do go to a dementia cafe and it is mostly older people, it gives you the opportunity to maybe volunteer at the cafe so that you've got a purpose to be there. And certainly for the people with dementia that I've worked with, they've really enjoyed volunteering at dementia cafes. Obviously, it comes back to being very person-centred and thinking about each individual, but that's worked quite well. And there are other organisations in the UK that can help put families together who are experiencing similar dementias and are in similar circumstances. But peer support is, as you've just said, it's so important that you don't feel that you're on your own. And I guess, you know, just reflecting back, we spoke about children. It's really, really important that children feel connected as well. And again, in the UK, I would say we don't have services for children from families of young onset as a rule, but there are some projects that have just started in recent years, very localized to particular areas, that are doing some groundbreaking work in supporting children. And I think as we move forward and we've got more understanding of children's needs, we can again look to think about what services we need to support those mm-hmm. children. And, you know, and the research will grow because there's very little research out there as well as to what children in young onset families need. Dementia UK has just appointed a new colleague of mine, and she's a consultant nurse for children and young people in families with dementia. So I think for her, it's going to be a really exciting few years in looking at what's out there in the UK and what we can grow and what we can develop, obviously with the support of research and funding. So yeah, a tremendously exciting time.
In the Young Dementia Network, in the website, one of their stated goals is lifelong support. I found that so powerful because that is the need almost, right?
Yeah, yeah. It is. No, it is. Yeah. And, you know, as I mentioned, pre-diagnosis, for me as a young onset nurse, I think it's really important that we support people pre-diagnosis where it looks very much like they've got dementia. And, you know, perhaps the neurologists, they're really working hard to find out what kind of dementia it is. But it's really important that the family have support right from the beginning so that they can start planning their future, which sounds like, how can you start planning your future right from the beginning? But it's just about making sure they know where the points of contact are. So there'll be times in their journey with dementia, and I know some people don't like to call it a journey, but I can never think of another way to describe it. But it is a journey, and it's really important, I think, along that journey, you know where to get support from. If you do the journey on your own, it's going to be really tough and really difficult. But actually, if you've got people along the way who can guide you and support you, it makes a difficult journey a lot easier. And it's essential to have that support all the way through, from pre-diagnosis until end of life. And, you know, it's certainly something that we as ABL nurses, we support people pre-diagnosis to end of life. I mean, sometimes the role varies, but it's something that, you know, certainly for me when working with families, I would strive to do so that the family can connect as and when they need to. Yeah, it's so important that they've got those connections.
Right.
And I think, unfortunately, families don't experience that equitably. However, what I would say is, you know, one of the things that we have as Dementia UK, which is invaluable, is our national telephone helpline. So families can call us, email us. We also have video appointments that we can make with families as well. So families can connect in with the charity and they can get the support of an ABL nurse. So, you know, certainly from my perspective, that's invaluable, and I'm so pleased we have that as a service.
Thank you so much, Julie. Like, this has been really, really beneficial for me and like for the people that will be listening to this. Last question: how do you think the media, like people like me who are part of the media, can do better in terms of telling the story of young onset better? I think only with awareness, people, only with understanding, there can be a greater appreciation and action then. What do you think can be done better by the media?
Certainly for young onset, I think it's about making sure that people are aware that you can have dementia as a younger person. You know, even though my job title is young onset dementia, it often surprises people that younger people, much younger people, can have dementia. And it's something that happens to somebody else. So it's really highlighting that young onset dementia is common. You know, in your community, you all have families living with young onset dementia. It's important that the media understands that. And I guess it's also important to sensitively share family stories. It's understood that it doesn't just affect the person, it affects the whole family across the generations. And I guess that's the real difference, I think, for younger families, that it's across the generations. It impacts financially the grandparents, the person with dementia, the children, and it changes their whole life.
Mm.
So as I mentioned earlier, you know, if it changes finances, the family might need to move, and they might move to a different area, then they don't have the same support around them, the children in different schools, not with the same friends. So it's really about highlighting the differences that the families experience, and that they can be affected by dementia like Alzheimer's. It's the most common type of dementia we see in younger people, but actually the symptoms that people experience when they're younger can be quite different. Hmm. So in older people, we typically think of dementia as being memory problems. And I think if you ask 10 people, the first symptom they would think of is memory problems with dementia, isn't it? Probably 9 out of 10 of them would say memory problems. But actually, in younger people, memory problems aren't necessarily the main symptom of concern or the first symptom. It's often things like changes in behaviour, changes in emotion, perhaps physio-spatial awareness problems, mobility problems. So there's very different symptoms in young onset dementia that families experience. And actually, they need a huge amount of support to understand those symptoms. So as I mentioned apathy earlier, if you understand the symptom, you can then work towards supporting that person. So it's not just about memory. It's about so much more than memory.
Mm.
And I think that's really important to get across, and just how complex it is at the time of life that it happens.
Last question. Sorry, I know I said last question just now, but just to your point on that awareness bit, right? What role does the education sector play in the UK in kind of distilling a lot of this very much needed information to education providers at whatever level, right? When they're kids or when they're teenagers or...
I would say, Matthew, that's actually quite variable. I would say it ranges from probably zero to none to actually some schools doing really, really well. A family, I didn't work directly with this family, but a family one of my colleagues worked with, where they had two children, where a parent had young onset dementia. The primary school worked with the family, and the primary school actually learned a lot about young onset dementia. They all became dementia friends. It was very open to supporting the family affected by young onset dementia. So they just took everything they could in terms of education.
Yeah.
All the children in the school understood dementia, young onset dementia, mm-hmm. and it worked fantastically well. I think in other areas of the education system in general, we have more work to do. I think my colleague I mentioned, who's just come into post for children and young people, I have a sense, and she hasn't said it to me, but I have a sense that perhaps a lot of her work will be around engaging education systems in understanding dementia across the board. Potentially organisations like the Scouts and the Brownies as well, more broadly. I think we still have a lot of work to do throughout our education system, even with our nurses, our doctors, our occupational therapists. I think dementia is certainly something that needs to be promoted much more clearly throughout the healthcare professions, for sure. The majority of adult patients that we come across in our healthcare system are older and do live with dementia. So it's really important that we have a good understanding. So we've still got a lot of work to do, Matthew. We're certainly not there with dementia, and you know, a lot of work to do around young onset dementia. But we've worked really hard. Certainly Dementia UK have worked really hard over the last 4 or 5 years, and the information that we have on our website, I think probably, as I say, 5 years ago, we had one leaflet on young onset dementia, and you know, now we've got a whole raft of information on there. So we are working really hard as an organisation to change that. But we have a long way to go, and that's part of my role as well, is to work across the UK to promote young onset dementia and its understanding.
Yeah, and I want you to know the work you do yes, it's for the UK, but it transcends borders, right?
Here Thank I am.
And someone from Kuala Lumpur having a conversation with you, right? Like, as far as young onset is concerned, like, I could not find more information anywhere else than what I found on Dementia UK website. And why?
Oh, that's really good to hear.
Young Dementia Network in particular, right? So,
I
strongly commend the work you're doing, because its impact has trickle down effects way beyond the UK. So thank you.
And fantastic. Yeah.
You mentioned gold standard. I think you are it right now, right? So the more you push, I think like everybody else will have to run faster in your lead. So
we hope so. But that's really lovely to hear. Actually, I don't often get international feedback. Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you for your time, Jules. Really appreciate it.
No, it's been really lovely meeting you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you want more of these type of stories, interviews, and guests, please follow the Dementia Research Project wherever you get your podcasts. Onwards and upwards.